Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You guys, I am so excited. My new course on behavior, the Practical Behavior Approach, is officially done and ready to go. Enrollment is only open until April 30th. And if you are someone who is supporting a child with frequent challenging behaviors, listen in because this course is for you. This course was designed for any teacher, special ed or gen ed, clinician or parent working with a child with frequent negative behaviors. This course is going to prepare you with a comprehensive toolbox. You're going to have all the tools you need to prevent problem behaviors, respond when problem behaviors happen, and to build those missing skills. We go in depth into why behavior happens, looking at contributing factors like diagnosis, trauma, anxiety, and sensory needs. This is truly a cohesive course where strategies are rooted in the science of applied behavior analysis, but also rooted in trauma-informed practices. So you're going to have both perspectives to develop this really robust framework of strategies that is truly going to be effective. So if you are feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, or out of answers on how to support your kids, click on the link in the show notes and learn a little bit more about this course and how the training and all of the downloads and tools are going to really help support you on this journey to helping your child be successful. I can't fully express how excited I am to get this course in your hands. Click on the link in show notes. Let me know if you have any questions. And when you get started, let me know how it goes.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Welcome back to the Autism Helper Podcast. Today, I'm so excited to share my interview with Dr. Taylor Day. Dr. Day is a licensed child psychologist and parental coach who specializes in autism and neurodivergent affirming care. Today, we are discussing her whole family approach. I think this is such a valuable framework for working collaboratively with families in a way that is not only effective, but really going to have a positive impact on every member of that family. In this episode, we talk about what neurodivergent affirming approaches are and how parents can ensure that they are providing those strategies for their child. We also discuss the impact of a diagnosis on that whole family, siblings included. What role do siblings play in this, and how Dr. Tay includes siblings and the whole family with the therapeutic work that she does. So let's jump in and hear from Dr. Tay. Hi, Dr. Tay. I am so excited to have you here on the Autism Helper Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today, too.
I think we're going to be touching on such an important topic today that we really haven't covered a ton on the podcast, and I think will be really valuable for both families, but teachers supporting parents and caregivers as well. So today we're going to be talking about Taylor's whole family approach. And why do you feel so passionate about bringing the whole family together and really changing the narrative of autism care?
Yeah. So let me give a little history because I think this really shapes the work that I do now as a psychologist. So my brother and I are 10 years apart. And when he was 23 months of age, he was diagnosed with autism. He's now 23. So this was over two decades ago. But I was 12 at the time. So I was very aware of everything that was going on and, you know, just beginning to build an understanding of autism. And he was really fortunate that where we lived, he had access to wonderful services. And I think, you know, at the time that was pretty rare. But what I realized through this journey is there was very little support for the rest of our family, for my parents, for myself, in navigating what this autism journey looks like. And the reality is it did impact us on a day-to-day basis. I say a lot now professionally that an autism diagnosis doesn't just impact your child, it impacts the whole family. And so basically, you know, long story is I knew I wanted to go into the autism field, kind of navigated a few different ways, decided on a PhD in clinical psychology, but I was planning to go into research. I went into academia once I got my PhD and was just feeling, you know, like, I don't know, it felt misaligned. It felt like I missed having that impact for families. And so when I launched my own private practice, which was a little over a year ago at this point, I just decided I wanted to do it different and that we needed to focus on the entire family unit and providing the support so that, you know, parents felt supported, parents knew how to support their other children, and also at the same time that the autistic child was getting the highest quality of care.
Oh my gosh, I love this so much. I'm like smiling ear to ear hearing you describe this. And I love kind of hearing your background and what brought you to this place because it feels really organic, right? You have this like background, professional background and this personal background, which come together so beautifully.
Absolutely. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And yeah, I don't think I knew when my brother was diagnosed where this would lead me necessarily, but it does feel full circle. And, you know, it's really cool too to be able to share my story. I think for so long, I was a little hesitant to share, you know, what it was like growing up as a sibling because I was like, well, autism is my brother's story. It's not mine. But then once I really learned, like, no, it's our family story. And it absolutely shaped me into the clinician I am today, but it also shaped me on a personal level as well.
Yeah. A little bit anecdote on my end. I'm a former teacher and we used to do a family field trip once a year. We started doing this, I don't know, when I was like 5 years, 6 years into teaching, and we would go up to a camp in Wisconsin and all the siblings would come. And that was actually one of my favorite parts of the day was seeing the siblings connect from different families and parents connect from different families. There weren't many parent groups in our area or things where parents could get to know other families that have a child with autism. But seeing the siblings really have that space to watch their sibling feel safe, but also be with other kids and teenagers who understood what their life was like in such a unique way. And I just don't think we have enough space for that. And we're not talking about that enough.
Yeah. I think that program you guys did and that field trip day is so rare. I mean, I think that's incredible that y'all did that. But yeah, there isn't a lot out there like that. And I think, you know, what we typically hear too is that there are support groups. And while I think support groups can be incredible, I also hear a lot of reports from parents that they sometimes don't feel supportive. And I think some of that is this idea of, you know, you're at different parts of the journey. And if there's not like a skilled facilitator to really help be able to implement and make change, that sometimes, yes, you can feel not alone, but then I have heard parents say the other side of it almost feels hopeless. Or, you know, sometimes too, it doesn't feel like my child and what their needs are fit with the rest of the group in terms of what, you know, other parents' children need.
Yeah, finding that like sweet spot of a support group that you said has that skilled facilitator can really provide those connections is super challenging. And they're, even though we hear like they're out there, not that often either. So right, being able to connect with families in the way you are, I'm sure it has such a positive impact on that whole family dynamic, including those siblings.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I will say this is one of the reasons I started a group therapy model. And so it has this community element. It's all parents of autistic children. But the advantage of it is you're working with a psychologist who can give you, you know, tips and strategies. And then the way that I design it as well, which is part of the whole family approach, you know, at the end of the day, things don't happen on weekly intervals. You know, it's awesome to be able to get any services. But what I find is all these things happen throughout the week and parents don't always know how to navigate them. So as part of my group therapy model as well, I built in, you know, unlimited support. So there's a chat that parents can connect with each other, but also at the same time, I'm stepping in and giving support strategies and interventions and answering questions and all of that.
Oh, that's great. Can we scale back for a second? Can you kind of give your elevator pitch of what the whole family approach is and what your services and your model looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I run a concierge practice, and what's really cool about it is psychology, you know, without going into too many details, because I'm licensed in one state that is part of this compact, it allows me to practice in 40 states currently. So I have a telehealth-based, you know, program where I'm able to do diagnostic evaluations and provide therapy services. But at the core, at the center of everything I do is this consideration of the whole family. And, you know, what this actually looks like in practicality is your child is, you know, if we're on the intervention side, is going to get, you know, evidence-based principles that are going to be able to support them, meaning that they ultimately, we know from research that these are effective. But I also incorporate, because this is super important as well, neurodivergent affirming approaches and helping parents learn about neurodiversity. But I take it one step further in that, you know, parents are able to have space for their own emotions, be able to process this, you know, be able to ask questions, be able to share their worries and their concerns and get the support they need. And a lot of times too, because of my personal, you know, background, but also I think it's super important, we're talking about, you know, interactions with siblings and how we can support that and how we can help siblings understand, you know, that their autistic sibling's brain is wired differently, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing, and being able to learn how to connect with their sibling as well.
Oh, that's so valuable to have that coaching on those, you know, sibling dynamics, because that's something there really isn't any manual guidebook training on, regardless, you know, what types of children you have, but especially when we have neurodivergent children included, on how we can support those kids having a strong relationship.
Right, right. Yeah, you think about something like emotion dysregulation or difficulties, you know, with regulating emotions, having big feelings. That's a common example that comes up with autistic children. We know the large majority of autistic kids have difficulty regulating their emotions. But a lot of times the situations that are most dysregulating are with their siblings. And so it is trying to find this balance too of what is just, you know, sibling rivalry versus where do we maybe need more education about neurodiversity and like helping, you know, each, you know, sibling to understand how their sibling's brain thinks differently than theirs. And also then thinking about how do we balance, you know, sometimes like sensory sensitivities. How do we balance, you know, that? But we also, too, want to make sure that the non-autistic sibling isn't the one that's always adapting and changing. Because the reality is, at the end of the day, they're still a kid and they still have support needs as well.
Yeah. And kids still fight, you know, yeah. Siblings are gonna argue and engage in those same kinds of behaviors. But you're right. It's that balance of figuring out when we need support and education and when we can let some independent problem solving happen.
Totally. Totally.
So you use the phrase neurodivergent affirming approaches. For those that aren't familiar with what that means, can you explain what that means and what that looks like when you are coaching families and caregivers?
Yeah. So the idea of neurodiversity is that all brains think differently. And it's really about building acceptance around these differences. And so really, a lot of times we think of within this neurodiversity umbrella, there's neurotypical individuals. These are often the individuals that, you know, don't have any, you know, identified disabilities, you know, are also growing and changing along a quote unquote typical trajectory. But then we also have this like group of neurodivergent individuals. These are the ones that often have disabilities, autism being one of them. Also can be ADHD or learning disabilities, you know, but we also might see developmental delays. And so there is this difference. And at the end of the day, we live in a very neurotypical world where, you know, all of our benchmarks and what we say is, you know, socially acceptable, right versus wrong, are based on these neurotypical standards. And so with neurodiversity, what we're doing is we're really expanding our understanding that just because it's different doesn't mean that it needs to be changed or fixed. And so when you're using an intervention approach that, you know, has these affirming principles or neurodivergent affirming principles, what that means is we are focused on, number one, how we can support the autistic child's strengths and also be able to, you know, provide those support need areas more support. But we're focusing largely in terms of support needs on what is going to promote that child's quality of life. So we're not teaching a skill simply because it's not a neurotypical skill, but instead because we know that it's going to help them navigate the world. A great example of this is eye contact. You know, in our neurotypical world, we're used to people looking at us, you know, and we equate when someone looks at you, that means they're attending to you. And within neurodivergent affirming approaches, we're not going to focus on eye contact. At the end of the day, there's so many different ways to be able to attend and engage. And so instead, what we're going to do, sometimes it's, you know, as, you know, parents or providers or teachers shifting our understanding, and we're the ones making the change of, okay, you know, this child might not be looking at me, but they can just tell me everything that I just said, and being like, I don't need them to look at me. But then an example, you know, on the child support side is we might give different modalities of them being able to communicate their needs and focusing on that. And that's going to help with their self-advocacy skills.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Those are great examples. And what advice do you have when parents kind of struggle with, let's stick with this example of eye contact, on kind of overcoming that hump of like, it's okay that this looks different. These are supports we're going to give. And let's think about, yeah, the end goal for this child. Because, you know, I've definitely worked with parents, and I know teachers listening have as well, that are like, well, we need this skill. And it's more on the person who needs it is maybe the adult, not necessarily the child.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is an indicator a lot of times that, you know, learning more about neurodiversity is really going to open up this understanding. Because this understanding of we need eye contact, that is coming from these neurotypical standards. Because, you know, wired deep in our brains, what we're saying is eye contact equals attention equals learning, right? And mm-hmm. that is that neurotypical sequence. And so I think what happens is we're so used to that, we're programmed to think that, that then when we don't see eye contact, like a teacher might worry like, oh my gosh, this kid isn't learning, or a parent might be like, oh, they're not hearing me. And so some of it is doing that internal learning to basically deprogram what's previously been programmed in the parent or the teacher's mind of being like, wait a minute, that's not true, you know, for mm-hmm. this kiddo. This kiddo learns differently. And one of the things to think about too is, you know, in terms of a learning environment, if we are requiring a child to give eye contact as an indicator that they are listening and attending and learning, two things can be happening. Number one, autistic individuals, autistic adults in particular, have reported that sometimes making eye contact is very uncomfortable. And so that could be dysregulating their nervous system. And so if we're forcing it, their nervous system could become dysregulated, which isn't optimal for learning. And then number two, the thing to think about as well is, you know, our brains can only be able to do so much at once. And so if you are telling them that they need to make eye contact with you, they're going to have to spend a lot of focus and energy being like, I'm supposed to be making eye contact right now. And then they're still not learning. They're still not being able to take in that information at full capacity. So something as simple as, you know, we ideally want this, it's more a mindset shift on the adult's end of how does this child really learn? What do they really need? And knowing that that is ultimately going to help them thrive. And one of the things we do often see with eye contact is that when we really are following the child's lead and engaging them in activities that they enjoy and their bodies are regulated, we often tend to get eye contact more naturally, but we are never requiring it. We're never prompting for it because we know, you know, how that just disrupts the whole learning process.
That's a great example. And I'm sure that really resonates with parents and caregivers when you kind of dive into like, well, why do we really need this? And what would this help? And let's look at what's successful right now. And like you said, really kind of instigating that mindset shift that maybe sometimes educators or parents might need to get to that place of those neurodivergent affirming practices.
Right. And I also want to say that it is okay if as the adult, as the parent, as the teacher, you feel discomfort with this because you're like, but I really feel like they should be making eye contact. Like, it is okay if this doesn't come intuitively to you, you know, where you're just like, okay, I'm ready to drop this. It's going to be a process because for so many years, you were given all this information that, again, eye contact equals attention equals learning. And so be patient with yourself. Give yourself grace in this. And I really encourage you, you know, I love TikTok and Instagram for this. Start, you know, just reading about neurodiversity and this huge mindset shift that is happening. And I think I find most times when parents learn about it that it actually matches on to their parenting style even more because ultimately they just want to make sure that their kid is happy and healthy and thriving. And neurodivergent affirming approaches put that at the center.
Yes. And that's, I think, great advice for educators and clinicians too, yes. Especially because, you know, maybe what you were taught in school 10, 15, 20 years ago is now different than best practices and evidence-based strategies right now. And mm-hmm. and that's a change. And, you know, change is uncomfortable for everyone. You know, I'm a BCBA and the field of ABA is, I think, going through a very much needed shift right now. And you can definitely see practitioners kind of be in that discomfort a little bit that we were taught escape extinction and these were strategies we were taught and now we're hopefully shifting towards a more trauma-informed approach. So mm-hmm. it's very needed in parts of the community, but it might feel uncomfortable or different at first.
Absolutely. And I wasn't trained on any of this. I graduated with my PhD in 2020, so that wasn't very long ago. I literally never heard of any of these concepts. And then when I, you know, launched my practice and honestly, like, started sharing about autism on social media, I also started listening. So one of the best resources is going to autistic adults and listening to their lived experiences. That's not going to be published in the research. You know, we haven't caught up is the reality of it, and also the way that research works and interventions are designed. But I think we can take the knowledge that we have and really incorporate different perspectives. And this is one of the reasons on the child side too, I talk about, you know, I use a lot of evidence-informed principles. I do still use CBT, you know, for example, but I'm also willing to pivot and navigate and bringing in more of these affirming approaches as well. And I have no problem. Like, a great example of this is I was trained in Early Start Denver model, which is a naturalistic developmental behavioral intervention following the child's lead. And that does prompt for eye contact more. It does it in a really naturalistic way. But honestly, I just choose not to focus on that part. And I educate parents on what I just talked about. And what we do see is, again, by following the child's lead and engaging them, you know, ultimately we are getting more eye contact, but we're not putting that as a goal. So it is also okay to take an existing intervention and be like, you know, what really is working here?
Yes, especially with how different every child is. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different skills we could look at, you know, what's age appropriate, what's in line with their interests, what's in line with their personality and unique needs, that there's really not going to be one perfect solution for any child.
Totally.
So kind of going back, because we had talked about the siblings, which I love this concept of including the siblings in the work that you're doing. Why is education important for the whole family, including those siblings during the diagnosis process and beyond?
I mean, I think ultimately getting a diagnosis of autism is hard. And I think, you know, this is one of the things, even as a professional, I'm going to share openly. I struggled with this idea of neurodiversity for a little bit of like, okay, we're so used to, you know, as clinicians, and I think teachers often are trained in a similar way of thinking of autism in terms of the medical model of everything is deficit based. And what neurodiversity talks about is that there are differences. And again, we don't have to fix or change them. And I think that, you know, that was a huge shift that that is a huge shift we are starting to see. But we also have to keep in mind that all of our systems have that medical model concept in mind. So if your child is at school, your non-autistic child is at school and learning about autism, they might be learning about more stereotypical presentations of autism. And they might be going, wait, my sibling's autistic. This doesn't seem to explain how my sibling is. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And you as the parent, you go to, you know, get the diagnosis, and more likely than not, when you read that diagnostic report, it's telling you everything that is quote unquote wrong with your child, everything that doesn't match on to our neurotypical standards. And so, you know, it's easy too to go into that mindset of, you know, what's wrong with my child? How do I fix them if we constantly are focusing on the deficits? And so I think really two things are important here is number one, getting a diagnosis of autism is hard. And I think really acknowledging all of the emotions that come with that are so incredibly important. I see a lot of parents take on the diagnosis and hop into intervention mode. And understandable, you want to help your child and your feelings don't disappear. And the reality is it's easy to pretend to push them down, but all of your children are going to be able to sense this. You know, your non-autistic children are going to be able to sense a shift. And also your schedule might fill up more where all of a sudden you're having to take your autistic child to all these different appointments. And that might leave less bandwidth for your non-autistic children. So I think addressing the emotions is really important. But then also, like I talked about earlier, I think, you know, neurodiversity doesn't just start with learning about your autistic child's brain. It literally is everyone's brain thinks differently. And we need all kids to understand this concept, to be able to be more accepting. And I think on the parental level too, it's going to help you understand your child, but it also can help you understand your reactions and how your brain is wired, and everything is interconnected with the family.
Yes. And if you miss, if you kind of don't include that piece, the emotion piece for the parents, the emotion piece for the siblings, I just imagine there being such a big void. And all I kept thinking when you're talking is like potential sources of like resentment, guilt, you know, lack of confidence in your skill as a parent, that all these things could really build up and become such an insurmountable problem.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's crazy to me that the field hasn't shifted in this way, but I will say I talk with many parents as part of my diagnostic evaluations. Like, we talk about parental emotions really, really explicitly. And even if a parent's like, yep, I knew this was autism, like most of the time they're still crying during feedback, because it's different when a provider confirms your child's diagnosis. But also, you might walk out of that appointment feeling good about it, but we're human. Our emotions change constantly. And so just having that conversation and giving yourself permission to feel, it has such a huge impact. And it's crazy how little that that is addressed. And so what I find, and you hit the nail on the head, is a lot of parents then are feeling shame and guilt over their child's diagnosis and wondering what they did wrong, what they need to do better, you know, and constantly questioning themselves, is this the right decision? You know, and when we can actually recognize all of the complexity of the emotions, it's also going to allow you to make decisions with a more clear mind and understanding the full picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I was thinking as you were talking about, you know, I spend most of my days talking to teachers, and you know, teachers are oftentimes the kind of point person with a parent, maybe even a parent that got a diagnosis later into elementary school or shows up at preschool 3 years old with this new diagnosis and hasn't had early intervention. And they're their person. They might be the person that gets it all. And you might feel like, you know, part of your role as a teacher now is therapeutic with that parent. But and that parent might need that support, mm-hmm. and that person to connect with, because they might not have anyone else.
Yeah. So I have a couple thoughts for teachers that actually came to mind is, you know, I talk a lot with parents about you need to be collaborating with your teachers and coming at it from, okay, here's what's happening at home. You know what's happening at school. How can our minds meet together to really support this child? And I do think that sometimes parents, because of the natural just hierarchy that exists in systems, are afraid to sometimes speak up. And so I invite you as a teacher to, and I know it can be nerve-wracking from a teacher standpoint too, but, you know, just inviting that conversation, you know, asking how can I support your child? What do you know about your child at home that would be really helpful for me at school? And the more that you can collaborate with parents, I understand your time is limited and you have a very, very full schedule. And so this does take extra effort. But I love this metaphor. I use it in so many things, this idea of slowing down to speed up, that sometimes laying this foundation, slowing down, taking the time to ask is actually going to make everything else go so much more seamless and quicker and easier, you know, on the back end. So the more yes. that you can have that collaborative conversation.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, that metaphor is so perfect to explain, I think, that parent-teacher relationship, because if a teacher can give more time up front to build rapport, to build that connection, you can avoid a lot of those potential misunderstandings down mm-hmm. the road and have just such a smoother path with that family moving forward, which is what we all want, whatever yep. side we are on.
Absolutely. And I know it's hard too, because teachers and school districts have different rules about this too, but I will say I get a lot of parents, and I explain why this happens, but a lot of parents being like, well, why did the teachers never say anything about autism? And I talk about, you know, how certain systems they're not able to. But even if you don't ever bring up the word autism, if you see concerns in your classroom, at least initiating that conversation. And I will say I've seen the opposite for teachers that do this. It creates a cascading effect where parents start to be like, huh, okay, the teacher's concerned. Maybe I have been a little concerned. It can be really validating to what the parent's experiencing at home. And I love coming at this from a question type approach of, hey, here's what I'm noticing in the classroom. Have you noticed any of these at home? So it again, it establishes that alliance that you guys are in this together and not being like, here's what's wrong with your kid, or here's what they're doing wrong, or here's what you're doing wrong as a parent that's causing this. So I love asking these open-ended questions to get their input, and then you guys can put the data together. And I find a lot of times parents will be like, well, do you think I need to get them evaluated? And ultimately, you have to follow policies you have at your school. But I think that that starts to plant the seed.
But you're right, that validation piece might be what a lot of parents need too, that like, I'm the only one that sees it. Maybe it's just me. But when someone else, even just an open-ended question, could be like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't ignore this. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. And so just to touch on this, like I talk about the whole family approach, but this is also where, you know, having this entire team is so incredibly important. And so I place a really, really big emphasis on care coordination. Like all of my patients, I'm reaching out to their teachers. I'm understanding what's going on at school and how I can help to facilitate that relationship, because, you know, teachers and or other clinicians like speech language pathologists, occupational therapists, if they're working with the BCBA, you know, the more that we can have all the minds meet together, this is going to support the family even more in this really holistic way, so that there is also consistency across environments, which is important for the kid, but it's also important so that the parent knows what to focus on at home.
Yes. Oh my God. We could have a whole other episode on that. I'm like that team right. collaboration piece.
Yeah.
Because so many poor parents, I think, are forced into that role of being the point person between yes. everyone. And it's too much for them. Yeah.
Yeah. They need to be the parent. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I kind of realized. It was like, wait, I can take this over. And it's one of my favorite things that I do, being able to, you know, bring this team together. And I will say, like, the parent is just like, a lot of times is like, thank you. And to be honest, sometimes with the school system, I think parents can go and advocate for their kids, and it can potentially, there's a lot of emotions that come with that more often than not. And so then sometimes schools aren't listening to the parent. I wish it wasn't like this, but sometimes coming in as the psychologist and being like, here's what I see, here are my concerns, I do find that schools tend to be more responsive to that.
Yeah, I could see that definitely. Well, thank you so much. I could like chat with you all day. We have covered a lot in a half an hour. So I so appreciate you joining me. Where can people go to learn more from you and learn about your practice?
Absolutely. So one of the main things, I love just providing autism education. So I do that a lot on Instagram and TikTok. So it's just the period DR period Tay. So the Dr. Tay with periods in between. My website is currently, you know, getting revamped, but it's drtaylorday.com. And then also, Sasha, I have a free resource for parents to learn more about neurodivergent affirming care and how to be able to navigate the system to build a collaborative, cooperative team. So I'd love to share that link with you as well, so parents can have that free resource.
Perfect. We will put that in the show notes, as well as a link to your Instagram and TikTok and website. So Thank you again so much for joining me.
Thank you. This was wonderful. I appreciate you giving the space and opportunity to be able to talk about this topic today.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that.
If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VB map and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.